The 33 sermons on Nibbana were delivered by the Venerable Bhikkhu Katukurunde Nyanananda in Sinhala at Mitrigala Nisaranavanaya Forest Hermitage. They were translated into English by the same Venerable Monk, presently residing at Potkulkala Forest Hermitage in Kandagedra Devalagam.
Namo tas bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhasa. Namo tas bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhasa. Namo tas bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhasa. Etang santang, etang panitang, yadidang sabbasankhara samatho, sabbopadhipatini saggo, tannakhyo, virago, nirodho, nibbana. This is peaceful, this is excellent, namely the stilling of all preparations, the relinquishment of all assets, the destruction of craving, detachment, cessation, extinction. With the permission of the most venerable great preceptor and the assembly of the venerable meditative monks, this is the 20th sermon in the series of sermons on Nibbana. In our last sermon, we described as something of a marvel in the attainment of Nibbana, the very possibility of realizing in this very life, as Dittadhammika, one's after-death state, which is Samparayika. The phrase Dittevadhammi Sayam Abhinya Sajjagatva, having realized here and now by one's own higher knowledge, occurs so often in the discourses because the emancipated one ascertains his after-death state as if by seeing with his own eyes. Nathi dani punabhavo, there is no re-becoming now. Kina jati, extinct is birth, are some of the joyous utterances of the Buddha and the Arahants, which were inspired by the realization of the cessation of existence in this very life. Through that realization itself, they experience a bliss devoid of feeling, which is called the cooling off of feelings. That is why Nibbana as such is known as Avedaita Sukha, a bliss devoid of feeling. At the end of their lives, when the moment of death approaches, those emancipated ones, the Arahants, put forward their unshakable deliverance of the mind, akuppa cheto vimutti, which remains unshaken even in the face of death, and become deathless well before their death, not after it. On many an occasion, the Buddha has spoken highly of this unshakable deliverance of the mind, describing it as the supreme bliss, the supreme knowledge, and the supreme freedom from death. For instance, among the sixes of the Anguttara Nikaya, we come across the following two verses. Tassa samma vimuttassa jnanam vehoti tadino akuppame vimutti iti bhava sanyojana khaye etang kho paramajnanam etang sukham anuttaram asokam virajam khemam etang ananyamuttamam. To that such like one who is fully released, there arises the knowledge, unshakable is my deliverance, upon his extinction of fetters to existence. This is the highest knowledge, this is the unsurpassed bliss. This sorrowless, taintless security is the supreme deathlessness. Arahants are said to be deathless in regard to the four requisites offered by the laity out of faith, but when Nibbana is regarded as a deathlessness, it seems to imply something deeper. Samsara or reiterated existence is itself a debt which one can never pay off. When one comes to think of karma and its result, it is a debt that keeps on gathering an interminable interest which can never be paid off. But even from this debt, the Arahants have won freedom by destroying the seeds of karma, by rendering them infertile. They are made ineffective beyond this life as there is no rebirth. The meaningful line of the Ratana Sutta, Kheenam Puranam Navam Nathi Sambhavam, whatever is old is extinct and there is no arising anew, has to be understood. In that sense, the karmic debt is paid off and there is no fresh incurring. So all this is in praise of that unshakable deliverance of the mind. It is a kind of extraordinary knowledge, almost unimaginable, a realization of one's own after-death state. In almost all serious discussions on Nibbana, the subtlest moot point turns out to be the question of the after-death state of the emancipated one. A brief answer the Buddha had given to this question we already brought up in our last sermon by quoting the two concluding verses of the Udana, with which that collection of inspired utterances ends with a note of exceptional grandeur. Let us recall them. Ayoghanhata seva jalato jata vedaso anupubbo pasantasta yathana jnayate gati evam samma vimuttanam kama bandho ghatarinam panyapetum gati nathi pattanam achalam sukham. Just as in the case of a fire blazing like a block of iron in point of compactness, when it gradually calms down, no path it goes by can be traced. Even so, of those who are well released, who have crossed over the floods of shackles of sensuality and reached bliss unshaken, there is no path to be pointed out. The last two lines are particularly significant. There is no path to be pointed out of those who have reached bliss unshaken. Achalam sukham, or unshakable bliss, is none other than that unshakable deliverance of the mind. Akupa means unassailable or unshakable. Clearly enough, what the verse says is that after their death, the emancipated ones leave no trace of a path gone by, even as the flames of a raging fire. The flame may appear as something really existing due to the perception of the compact, Ghanasanya, but when it goes down and disappears, no one can say that it went in such and such a direction. Though this is the obvious meaning, some try to attribute quite a different meaning to the verse in question. The line Panyapetum gati nathi, there is no path to be pointed out, is interpreted even by the commentators who take the word gati to mean some state of existence as an assertion that although such a boon cannot be pointed out, the arahants pass away into some nondescript realm. This kind of interpretation is prompted by an apprehension of the charge of annihilation. A clear instance of this tendency is revealed in the commentary to the following verse in the Dhammapada. Ahimsaka ye munayo nityam kayena sanguta te yanti achyutam thanam yattha gantva na sochare. Innocent are the sages that are ever restrained in body. They go to that state unshaken wherein they grieve no more. The commentator, in paraphrasing, brings in the word sasatam, eternal, for achyutam, thereby giving the idea that the arahants go to an eternal place of rest. Because the verb yanti, go, occurs there, he must have thought that this state unshaken, achyutam, is something attainable after death. But we can give another instance in support of our explanation of the term achyutam. The following verse in the Hemaka Manava Puccha of Parayana Vagga in the Sutta Nipata clearly shows what this achyutam is. Ida ditta sutta mutta vinyatesu pyarupesu hemaka chandaraga vinodanam nibbana padamachyutam. That dispelling here in this world of desire and lust in pleasurable things, seen, heard, sensed and cognized, is nibbana itself, O hemaka. This is further proof of the fact that there is no eternal immortal rest awaiting the arahants after their demise. The reason for such a postulate is probably the fear of falling into an annihilationist view. Why this chronic fear? To the worldlings overcome by the craving for existence, any teaching that leads to the cessation of existence appears dreadful. That is why they put forward two new parables following the same commentarial trend. The other day we mentioned about those two parables, the parable of the tortoise and the parable of the frog. When the fish and the toad living in water ask what sort of a thing land is, The tortoise and the frog are forced to say no, no to every question they put. Likewise, the Buddha, so it is argued, was forced to give a string of negative terms in his discourses on Nibbana. But we have pointed out that this argument is fallacious and that those discourses have to be interpreted differently. The theme that runs through such discourses is none other than the cessation of existence. In the Aragadhyupama Sutta of the Majjhima Nikaya, the Buddha declares in unmistakable terms that some recluses and Brahmins, on hearing him preaching the Dhamma for the cessation of existence, wrongly accuse him with the charge of being an annihilationist. Sato sattasya uccedang vinasang vibhang panyapeti. He is showing the way to the annihilation, destruction and non-existence of a truly existing being. He clearly states that some even grieve and lament and fall into despair, complaining, Uchijjasami namasu, vinasisami namasu, nasu nama bhavisami. So it seems I shall be annihilated, so it seems I shall perish, so it seems I shall be no more. Even during the lifetime of the Buddha, there were various debates and controversies regarding the after-death state of the emancipated person among recluses and Brahmins. They were of the opinion that the after-death state of the emancipated one in any particular religious system has to be explained according to a fourfold logic or tetralemma. The paradigm of that tetralemma occurs quite often in the discourses. It consists of the following four propositions. Hoti tathagato param marana, na hoti tathagato param marana, hoti cha na hoti cha tathagato param marana, neva hoti na na hoti tathagato param marana. The tathagata exists after death, the tathagata does not exist after death, the tathagata both exists and does not exist after death. The Tathagata neither exists nor does not exist after death. This four-cornered logic purports to round up the four possible alternatives in any situation, or four possible answers to any question. The dilemma is fairly well known, where one is caught up between two alternatives. The tetralemma, with its four alternatives, is supposed to exhaust the universe of discourse in a way that one cannot afford to ignore it. When it comes to a standpoint regarding a particular issue, one is compelled to say yes or no, or at least to assert both standpoints or negate them altogether. The contemporary recluses and Brahmins held on to the view that a Tathagata's after-death state has to be predicated in accordance with the four-cornered logic. When we hear the term Tathagata, we are immediately reminded of the Buddha, but for the contemporary society, it was a sort of technical term with a broader meaning. Those recluses and Brahmins used the term Tathagata to designate the perfected individual in any religious system, whose qualifications were summed up in the thematic phrase Uttama Puriso, Param Puriso, Paramapattipatto, the highest person, the supreme person, the one who has attained the supreme state. This fact is clearly borne out by the Kutuhala Sala Sutta in the Avyakata Sanyutta of the Sanyutta Nikaya. In that discourse, we find the wandering ascetic Vachagotta coming to the Buddha with the following report. Recently, there was a meeting of recluses, Brahmins and wandering ascetics in the debating hall. In that assembly, the following chance talk arose. Now, there is this teacher, Purana Kassapa, who is widely acclaimed and who has a large following. When an ordinary disciple of his passes away, he predicates his destiny. So also in the case of a disciple who has attained the highest state of perfection in his religious system. Other well-known teachers like Makkhali Gosala, Niganthanatha Putta, Sanjaya Belatti Putta, Pakudha Kachayana, and Ajita Kesakambali do the same. They all declare categorically the after-death state of both types of their disciples. But as for this ascetic Gotama, who also is a teacher widely acclaimed with a large following, the position is that he clearly declares the after-death state of an ordinary disciple of his
But in the case of a disciple who has attained the highest state of perfection, he does not predicate his destiny according to the above mentioned tetralemma. Instead, he makes such a declaration about him as the following: Acchajit kanhang vavattei sanyojanang sammā māna abhisamya antamakāsi dukkhasya. He cut off craving, disjoined the fetter, and by rightly understanding conceit for what it is, made an end of suffering. Vachagatya concludes this account with the confession that he himself was perplexed and was in doubt as to how the dhamma of the recluse Gotama has to be understood. The Buddha grants that Vachagatya's doubt is reasonable with the words Alanghite vachya kankhitum alang vichikichitum kankhaniye panate thani kankha uppanna. It behoves you to doubt vachya, it behoves you to be perplexed, for doubt has arisen in you on a dubious point. Then the Buddha comes out with the correct standpoint in order to dispel vachya's doubt. Saupadanasya kvaham vachya uppatting panyapemi no anupadanasya. It is for one with grasping vachya that I declare there is an occurrence of birth, not for one without grasping. He gives the following simile by way of illustration. Sayathapi vachya agi saupadano jalati no anupadano. Evameva kvaham vachya saupadanasya upapatting panyapemi no anupadanasya. Just as a fire burns when it has failed to grasp and not when it has no fuel, even so vachya, I declare that there is an occurrence of birth for one with grasping, not for one without grasping. As we have mentioned before, the word upadana has two meanings. It means both grasping as well as fuel. In fact, fuel is just what the fire grasps. Just as the fire depends on grasping in the form of fuel, so also the individual depends on grasping for his rebirth. Within the context of this analogy, vachya now raises a question that has some deeper implications. Yasmincha panabhogotama samaye acchi vatena khitta durampi gacchati imasa panabhavam gotamo ting upadanasming panyapet. Master Gotama, at the time when a flame flung by the wind goes even far, what does Master Gotama declare to be its object of grasping or fuel? The Buddha's answer to that question is, Yasmin kho vachya samaye achi vatena khitta durampi gacchati samham vatupadanam vadami vato hissa vachya tasmin samaye upadanam hoti. At the time vachya, a flame flung by the wind, goes even far, that I say has wind as its object of grasping. Vachya, at that time, wind itself serves as the object of grasping. Now this is only an analogy. Vachya raises the question proper only at this point. Yasmincha panabhogotama samaye imancha kayang nikhipati satto cha anyatarang kayang anuppatto hoti imasa panabhavang gotamo king upadanasming panyapeti. At the time Master Gotama, a being lays down this body and has reached a certain body, what does Master Gotama declare to be a grasping in his case? The Buddha replies, at the time vachya, a being lays down this body and has reached a certain body, I say he has craving as his grasping. At that time vachya, it is craving that serves as a grasping for him. With this sentence, the discourse ends abruptly, but there is an intricate point in the two sections quoted above. In these two sections, we have adopted the reading anuppatto as more plausible in rendering the phrase anyatarang kayang anuppatto, has reached a certain body. The commentary, however, seeks to justify the reading anuppanno is not reborn, which gives quite an opposite sense. With the following explanation, chutikkhane yeva patisandhi cittasya anuppannatta anuppanno hoti. Since at the death moment itself, the rebirth consciousness has not yet arisen, he is said to be not yet reborn. Some editors doubt whether the correct reading should be anuppatto. The doubt seems reasonable enough, for even syntactically, anuppatto can be shown to fit into the context better than anuppanno. The word anyataran provides us with the criterion. It has a selective sense. like a certain and carries definite positive implications.
To express something negative, a word like anyang, another, has to be used instead of the selective anyatarang, a certain. On the other hand, the suggested reading anuppatto avoids those syntactical difficulties. A being lays down this body and has reached a certain body. Even the simile given as an illustration is in favor of our interpretation. The original question of Vachya about the flame flung by the wind reminds us of the way a forest fire, for instance, spreads from one tree to another tree some distance away. It is the wind that pushes the flame for it to catch hold of the other tree. The commentarial explanation, however, envisages a situation in which a being lays down this body and is not yet reborn in another body. It is in the interim that craving is supposed to be a grasping or a fear. Some scholars have exploited this commentarial explanation to postulate a theory of antarabhava or interim existence prior to rebirth proper. Our interpretation, based on the reading anuppatto, rule out even the possibility of an antarabhava. Obviously enough, Vachya's question is simple and straightforward. He is curious to know what sort of a grasping connects up the being that lays down the body and the being that arises in another body. That is to say, how the apparent gap could be bridged. The answer given by the Buddha fully accords with the analogy envisaged by the premise. Just as the wind does the work of grasping in the case of the flame, so craving itself at the moment of death fulfills the function of grasping for a being to reach another body. It is precisely why craving is called bhavanetti, the guide in becoming. Like a promontory, it juts out into the ocean of samsara. When it comes to rebirth, it is craving that bridges the apparent gap. It is the invisible combustible fuel that keeps the raging samsaric forest fire alive. All in all, what transpired at the debating hall reveals one important fact, namely that the Buddha's reluctance to give a categorical answer regarding the after-death state of the emancipated one in his dispensation had aroused the curiosity of those recluses and Brahmins. That is why they kept on discussing the subject at length. However, it was not the fact that he had refused to make any comment at all on this point, only that the comment he had made appeared so strange to them, as we may well infer from Vachya's report of the discussion at the debating hall. The Buddha's comment on the subject which they had quoted was not based on the tetralemma. It was a completely new formulation. Achchachitanham vavattai sanyojanam samma manabhisamaya antamakasi dukkhasya. He cut off craving, disjoined the fetter, and by rightly understanding conceit for what it is, made an end of suffering. This then is the correct answer and not any one of the four corners of the tetralemma. This brief formula is of paramount importance. When craving is cut off, the guide in becoming, which is responsible for rebirth, is done away with. It is as if the fetter binding to another existence has been unhooked. The term bhavasanyojanakhaya, destruction of the fetter to existence, we came across earlier, conveys the same sense. The phrase samma mana abhisamaya is also highly significant. With the dispelling of ignorance, the conceit am, asmi mana, is seen for what it is. It disappears when exposed to the light of understanding, and that is the end of suffering as well. The concluding phrase antamakasi dukkhasya, made an end of suffering, is conclusive enough. The problem that was there all the time was the problem of suffering. So the end of suffering means the end of the whole problem. In the Aggivachagatta Sutta of the Majjhima Nikaya, the Buddha's response to the question of the after-death state of the Arahant comes to light in greater detail. The question is presented there in the form of the tetralemma, beginning with Hoti Tathagato Parammarana. While all the other recluses and Brahmins held that the answer should necessarily take the form of one of the four alternatives, the Buddha put them all aside, tapitani, rejected them, patikhittani, refused to state his view categorically in terms of them, avyākatāni. This attitude of the Buddha puzzled not only the ascetics of other sects, but even some of the monks like Mālunkiputta. In very strong terms, Mālunkiputta challenged the Buddha to give a categorical answer or else confess his ignorance. As a matter of fact, there are altogether 10 questions which the Buddha laid aside, rejected and refused to answer categorically. The first 6 take the form of 3 dilemmas, while the last 4 constitute the tetralemma already mentioned. Since an examination of those 3 dilemmas would reveal some important facts, we shall briefly discuss their significance as well. The 3 sets of views are stated thematically as follows. Sassato loko, the world is eternal. Asassato loko, the world is not eternal. Antava loko, the world is finite. Anantava loko, the world is infinite. Tang jivan, tang sariran, the soul and the body are the same. Anyang jivan, anyang sariran, the soul is one thing and the body another. These 3 dilemmas, together with the tetralemma, are known as avyākatavatthūmi, the 10 undetermined points. Various recluses and Brahmins, as well as King Pasenadi Kosala, posed these 10 questions to the Buddha, hoping to get categorical answers. Why the Buddha laid them aside is a problem to many scholars. Some, like Mālunkiputta, would put it down to agnosticism. Others would claim that the Buddha laid them aside because they are irrelevant to the immediate problem of deliverance, though he could have answered them. That section of opinion go by the Singsapa Sutta in the Satya Samyutta of Samyutta Nikaya. Once while dwelling in a Singsapa grove, the Buddha took up some Singsapa leaves in his hand and asked the monks, "What do you think, monks, which is more, these leaves in my hand or those in the Singsapa grove?" The monks replied that the leaves in the hand are few and those in the Singsapa grove are greater in number. Then the Buddha makes the declaration to the following effect: "Even so, monks, what I have understood through higher knowledge and not taught you is far more than what I have taught you." If we rely on this simile, we would have to grant that the questions are answerable in principle, but that the Buddha preferred to avoid them because they are not relevant. But this is not the reason either. All these 10 questions are based on wrong premises. To take them seriously and answer them would be to grant the validity of those premises. The dilemmas and the tetralemma seek arbitrarily to corner anyone who tries to answer them. The Buddha refused to be cornered that way. The first 2 alternatives presented in the form of a dilemma are sassato loko, the world is eternal, and asassato loko, the world is not eternal. This is an attempt to determine the world in temporal terms. The next set of alternatives seeks to determine the world in spatial terms. Why did the Buddha refuse to answer these questions on time and space? It is because the concept of the world has been given quite a new definition in this dispensation. Whenever the Buddha redefined a word in common usage, he introduced it with the phrase Aryasya Vinaya, in the discipline of the noble ones. We have already mentioned on an earlier occasion that according to the discipline of the noble ones, the world is said to have arisen in the 6 sense spheres, chasuloko samuppanno. In short, the world is redefined in terms of the 6 spheres of sense. This is so fundamentally important that in the Salayatana Samyutta of the Samyutta Nikaya, the theme comes up again and again. For instance, in the Samiddhi Sutta, Venerable Samiddhi poses the following question to the Buddha. Loko loko ti bhante bucchati, titta avatanu kho bhante loko va asa loka panyati va. The world, so it is said, Venerable Sir. But how far, Venerable Sir, does this world or the concept of the world go? The Buddha gives the following answer. Yathakho samiddhi athi chakhu athi rupa athi chakhu vinyanam athi chakhu vinyatabha dhamma athi tatha lokuva lokapanyativa. Where there is the I samiddhi, where there are forms, where there is I consciousness, where there are things cognizable by I consciousness, there exists the world or the concept of the world. A similar statement is made with regard to the other spheres of sense, including the mind. That, according to the Buddha, is where the world exists. Then he makes a declaration concerning the converse. Yathakho samiddhi nathe chakhu nathe rupa nathe chakhu vinyanam nathe chakhu vinyatabha dhamma nathe tattha lokova lokapanyativa. Where there is no I samiddhi, where there are no forms, where there is no I consciousness, where there are no things cognizable by I consciousness, there the world does not exist, nor any concept of the world. From this we can well infer that any attempt to determine whether there is an end of the world, either in temporal terms or in spatial terms, is misguided. It is the outcome of a wrong view, for there is a world so long as there are the six spheres of sense. That is why the Buddha consistently refused to answer those questions regarding the world. There are a number of definitions of the world given by the Buddha. We shall cite two of them. A certain monk directly asked the Buddha to give a definition of the world. Loko lokoti bhante vuchyati kittavatanuko bhante lokoti vuchyati. The world, so it is said, in what respect, Venerable Sir, is it called a world? Then the Buddha makes the following significant declaration. Lujyati ti kho bhikkhu tasma lokoti vuchyati kincha lujyati chakhu kho bhikkhu lujyati rupa lujyanti chakhu vinyanam lujyati chakhu sampasso lujyati yampidan chakhu sampassa paccaya uppajjati vedayitam sukham va dukkham va dukkhama sukham va tampi lujyati lujyati ti kho bhikkhu tasma lokoti vuchyati. It is disintegrating monk, that is why it is called the world. And what is disintegrating? The I monk is disintegrating. Forms are disintegrating. I consciousness is disintegrating. I contact is disintegrating. And whatever feeling that arises dependent on I contact, be it pleasant or painful, or neither pleasant nor painful, that too is disintegrating. It is disintegrating, that is why it is called the world. Here the Buddha is redefining the concept of the world, punning on the verb lujjati, which means to break up or disintegrate, to bring about a radical change in outlook in accordance with the Dhamma. The Buddha would sometimes introduce a new etymology in preference to the old. This definition of the world is to the same effect. Venerable Ananda too raises the same question, soliciting a redefinition for the well-known concept of the world, and the Buddha responds with the following answer. Yankho Ananda paloka dhammam ayam ucchati ariyasa vinaye loko. Whatever Ananda is subject to disintegration, that is called the world in the Noble One's discipline. He even goes on to substantiate his statement at length. Kincha ananda paloka dhamma, chakhum kho ananda paloka dhamma, hopa paloka dhamma, chakhu vinyanam paloka dhamma, chakhu sampasso paloka dhamma, yampidam chakhu sampasso paccaya uppajjati vedayitam sukham va dukkham va dukkhama sukham va tampi paloka dhamma, yankho ananda paloka dhamma, ayam ucchati ariyasya vinaye loko. And what ananda is subject to disintegration? The I, Ananda, is subject to disintegration. Forms are subject to disintegration. I consciousness is subject to disintegration. I contact is subject to disintegration. And whatever feeling that arises dependent on I contact, be it pleasant or painful, or neither pleasant nor painful, that too is subject to disintegration. Whatever is subject to disintegration, Ananda, is called the world in the Noble One's discipline. In this instance, the play upon the word loka is vividly apt in that it brings out the transiency of the world. If the world by definition is regarded as transient, it cannot be conceived substantially as a unit. How then can any eternity or infinity be predicated about it? If all the so-called things in the world listed above are all the time disintegrating, any unitary concept of the world is fallacious. Had the Buddha answered those misconceived questions, he would thereby concede to the wrong concept of the world current among the other religious groups.
So then we can understand why the Buddha refused to answer the first four questions. Now let us examine the next dilemma. Tang jivang tang sariram, anyang jivang anyang sariram. The soul and the body are the same, the soul is one thing and the body another. To these questions also the other religionists insisted on a categorical answer, either yes or no. There is a catch in the way these questions are framed. The Buddha refused to get caught to them. These two questions are of the type that clever lawyers put to a respondent these days. They would sometimes insist strictly on a yes or no as answer and ask a question like, have you now given up drinking? If the respondent happens to be a teetotaler, he would be in a quandary, since both answers tend to create a wrong impression. So also in the case of these two alternatives, the soul and the body are the same, the soul is one thing and the body another. Either way, there is a presumption of a soul which the Buddha did not subscribe to. The Buddha had unequivocally declared that the idea of a soul is the outcome of an utterly foolish view. Kevalo paripuro baladhammo. That is why the Buddha rejected both standpoints. A similar catch, a similar misconception underlies the tetralemma concerning the after-death state of the Tathagata. It should be already clear to some extent by what we have discussed so far. For the Buddha, the term Tathagata had a different connotation than what it meant for those of other sects. The latter adhered to the view that both the ordinary disciple as well as the perfected individual in their systems of thought had a soul of some description or other. The Buddha never subscribed to such a view. On the other hand, he invested the term Tathagata with an extremely deep and subtle meaning. His definition of the term will emerge from the Aggivachagata Sutta, which we propose to discuss now. In this discourse, we find the wandering ascetic watcher trying to get a categorical answer to the questioner, putting each of the questions with legal precision one by one, as a lawyer would at the courts of law. Kinnu kho bho gotama sasato loko idameva satyang moghamanyanti evang ditthi bhavang gotamo. Now, Master Gotama, the world is eternal. This only is true. All else is false. Are you of this view, Master Gotama? The Buddha replies, Nakho ahang vachya evang ditthi. No, achya, I am not of this view. Then vachya puts the opposite standpoint, which too the Buddha answers in the negative. To all the 10 questions, the Buddha answers, no, thereby rejecting the questioner in toto. Then Vachagota asks why, on seeing what danger the Buddha refuses to hold any of those views. The Buddha gives the following explanation. Sasato lokoti kho vachya dittigatametam, dittigahanam, dittigantaram, dittivisukam, dittivipanditam, dittisanyojanam, sadukham, savighatam, saupayasam, saparilaham, na nibbidaya, na viragaya, na nirodhaya, na upasamaya, na abhinyaya, na sambodhaya, na nibbanaya. Vachya, this speculative view that the world is eternal, is a jungle of views, a desert of views, a distortion of views, an aberration of views, a fetter of views. It is fraught with suffering, with vexation, with despair, with delirium. It does not lead to disenchantment, to dispassion, to cessation, to tranquility, to higher knowledge, to enlightenment, to nibbana. So with regard to the other 9 views. Now here we find both the above mentioned reasons. Not only the fact that these questions are not relevant to the attainment of nibbana, but also the fact that there is something wrong in the very statement of the problems. What are the dangers that he sees in holding any of these views? Every one of them is just a speculative view, dittigatam, the jungle of views, dittigahanam, an arid desert of views, dittigantaram, a mimicry or distortion of views, dittivisukam, an aberration of views, dittivipanditam, a fetter of views, dittisanyojanam. They bring about suffering, sadukham, vexation, savighatam, despair, saupayasam, delirium, saparilaham. They do not conduce to disenchantment, nanibbidaya, dispassion, naviragaya, cessation, nanirodhaya, to tranquility, now upasamaya, to higher knowledge, now abhinyaya, to enlightenment, now sambodhaya, to extinguishment, now nibbanaya. From this declaration, it is obvious that these questions are ill-founded and misconceived. They are a welter of false beliefs, so much so that the Buddha even declares that these questions simply do not exist for the noble disciple who has heard the Dhamma. They occur as grave problems only to the untaught worldling. Why is that? Whoever has a deep understanding of the Four Noble Truths would not even raise these questions. This declaration should be enough for one to understand why the Buddha refused to answer them. Explaining that it is because of these dangers that he rejects them in toto, the Buddha now makes clear what his own stance is. Instead of holding any of those speculative views, he has seen for himself the rise, samudaya, and fall, arthagama, of the five aggregates as a matter of direct experience, thereby getting rid of all eyeing and mind and latencies to conceits and winning ultimate release. Even after this explanation, Vachcha resorts to the fourfold logic to satisfy his curiosity about the after-death state of the monk thus released in mind. Evaṃ vimutta citto paṇa bho Gotama bhikkhu kuhin uppajjat. When a monk is thus released in mind, Master Gotama, where is he reborn? The Buddha replies, uppajjati ti kho Vachcha na upeti. To say that he is reborn, Vachcha, falls short of a reply. Then Vachcha asks, tena hi bho Gotama na upajjati. If that is so, Master Gotama, is he not reborn? Na upajjati ti kho Vachcha na upeti. To say that he is not reborn, Vachcha falls short of a reply. Tena hi bho Gotama upajjati cha na cha upajjati ti. If that is so, Master Gotama, is he both reborn and not reborn? Upajjati ti cha na cha upajjati ti cha kho Vachcha na upeti. To say that he is both reborn and is not reborn falls short of a reply. Tena hi bho Gotama neva upajjati nana upajjati iti. If that is so, Master Gotama, is he neither reborn nor is not reborn? Neva upajjati nana upajjati iti kho Vachcha na upeti. To say that he is neither reborn nor is not reborn falls short of a reply. At this unexpected response of the Buddha to his four questions, Vachcha confesses that he is fully confused and bewildered. The Buddha grants that his confusion and bewilderment are understandable, since this Dhamma is so deep and subtle that it cannot be plumbed by logic. Atakkavacharo. However, in order to give him a clue to understand the Dhamma point of view, he gives an illustration in the form of a catechism. Tankim manyasi vachche sachete purato aggi jaleya janiyasi tvang ayam me purato aggi jalati iti. What do you think, vachche? Suppose a fire were burning before you, would you know this fire is burning before me? Sache me bho Gotama purato aggi jaleya janiyaham ayam me purato aggi jalati iti. If Master Gotama, a fire were burning before me, I would know this fire is burning before me. Sache panatang vachcha evang puchaya yote ayang puruto agi jalati ayang agi king paticha jalati iti evang putto kho vachcha kinti vyakare yasi. If someone were to ask you, vachcha, what does this fire that is burning before you burn independence on? Being asked thus, vachcha, what would you answer? Evang putto ahang bho Gotama evang vyakareyam. Yomi ayang puruto agi jalati ayang agi tinakattupadanam paticca jalati iti. Being asked thus, Master Gotama, I would answer, this fire burning before me burns independence on grass and sticks. Sachete vachche puruto so agini bayeye janeyasi tvang ayang me puruto agini bhutoti. If that fire before you were to be extinguished, would you know this fire before me has been extinguished? Sache me bho Gotama puruto so agini bhajaya jani yaham ayam me puruto agini bhutoti. If that fire before me were extinguished, Master Gotama, I would know this fire before me has been extinguished. සචේපනතං වච්ච එවං පුච්චේය යෝතේ අයං පුරතෝ වග්ගි නිබුතෝ සෝ වග්ගි ඊතෝ කතමං දිසං ගතෝ පුරත්තිමං වා පච්චිමං වා උත්තරං වා දක්ෂිණං වා ති එවං පුට්ඨෝ කෝ වච්ච කින්ති ව්‍යාකරී යාසි If someone were to ask you, Vach, when that fire before you were extinguished, to which direction did it go? To the east, the west, the north, or the south? Being asked thus, what would you answer?
Na upeti bhogotama, yanghi so bhogotama, agyitinakattu padanam patityajali, tasacha pariyadana, anyasacha anupahara, anaharo, nibbuto teva sankham gacchatiti. That wouldn't do as a reply, Master Gotama, for that fire burned independence on its fuel of grass and sticks, that being used up and not getting any more fuel, being without fuel, it is reckoned as extinguished. At this point, a very important expression comes up, which we happened to discuss earlier too, namely, Sankham Gacchati. It means to be reckoned or to be known as, to be designated. So the correct mode of designation in this case is to say that the fire is reckoned as extinguished and not to say that it has gone somewhere. If one takes mean advantage of the expression fire has gone out and insists on locating it, it will only be a misuse or an abuse of linguistic usage. It reveals a pervert tendency to misunderstand and misinterpret. Therefore, all that can be said by way of predicating such a situation is nibbutotveva sankham gacchati. It is reckoned as extinguished. Now comes a well-timed declaration in which the Buddha, starting right from where Vachakota leaves off, brings the whole discussion to a climactic end.
Eva meva kho vachya yena rūpena tathāgataṁ panyāpe māno panyāpeya taṁ rūpaṁ tathāgatasya pahīnaṁ ucchinna mūlaṁ Tala vathukatang, anabhavakatang, ayating anupada dhammang, rupa sankhavimutto kho vachya tathagato, gambhiro, appameyo, duparyogaho, swayathapi mahasamuddho, upajyatiti na upeti, na upajyatiti na upeti, upajyatiche, necha upajyatiti, na upeti, neva upajyati, na nupajyatiti, na upeti. Even so vachya, that form by which one designating the tathagata might designate him, that has been abandoned by him, cut off at the root, made like an uprooted palm tree, made non-existent and incapable of arising again. The Tathagata is free from reckoning in terms of form, vacha. He is deep, immeasurable and hard to fathom like the great ocean.
To say that he is reborn falls short of a reply. To say that he is not reborn falls short of a reply. To say that he is both reborn and is not reborn falls short of a reply. To say that he is neither reborn nor is not reborn falls short of a reply. This declaration, which a fully convinced Vachagotta now wholeheartedly hailed and compared to the very heartwood of a sala tree, enshrines an extremely profound norm of Dhamma. It was when Vachagotta had granted the fact that it is improper to ask in which direction an extinguished fire has gone, and that the only proper linguistic usage is simply to say that it is extinguished, that the Buddha came out with this profound pronouncement concerning the five aggregates. In the case of the Tathagata, the aggregate of form, for instance, is abandoned, pahina, cut off at the root, uchinnamula, made like an uprooted palm tree, divested from its sight, tāla avadhukatan, made non-existence, anabhavakatan, and incapable of arising again, āyatin anupāda dhamma. Thereby, the tathāgata becomes free from reckoning in terms of form, rūpa saṅkhā vimutto kho tathāgato. Due to this very freedom, he becomes deep, immeasurable, and unfathomable like the great ocean. Therefore, he cannot be said to be reborn or not to be reborn, or both or neither. The abandonment of form referred to above comes about not by death or destruction, but by the abandonment of craving. The fact that by the abandonment of craving itself, form is abandoned or eradicated comes to light from the following quotation from the Radha Samyutta of Samyutta Nikaya. Rupe ko radha, yo chandu, yo rago, ya nandi, ya tanha, tang pajahatha. Evang tang rupang pahinang bhavisati, uchinnamulang, talavatthukatang, anabhavakatang, ayating anupada dhamma. Radha, you give up that desire, that lust, that delight, that craving for form. It is thus that form comes to be abandoned, cut off at the root, made like an uprooted palm tree, made non-existent and incapable of arising again. Worldlings are under the impression that an arahant's five aggregates of grasping get destroyed at death. But according to this declaration, an arahant is like an uprooted palm tree. A palm tree, uprooted but left standing, divested of its sight, might appear as a real palm tree to one who sees it from a distance. Similarly, an untaught worldling thinks that there is a being or person in truth and fact when he hears the term Tathagata, even in this context too. This is the insinuation underlying the above-quoted pronouncement. It has some profound implications, but time does not permit us to go into them today.
Dear listeners, it is our sincere wish to make these sermons accessible, free of charge, to all who like to listen to them, because the gift of the Dhamma excels all other gifts. We therefore encourage you to copy these sermons and share them with others, but kindly note that they should not be reproduced for sale. May the blessings of the Triple Gem be with you.